And we are a nation that is hostile to liberty and freedom and faith. We are a nation whose economy is floundering, whose stores are not stocked, whose deliveries are not coming, and whose educational system is ranked at the bottom of every list. We are a nation that in many ways has become a joke. But soon we will have greatness again. It was hardworking patriots like you who built this country, and it is hardworking patriots like you who are going to save our country. There is no mountain we cannot climb. There is no summit we cannot reach. There is no challenge we cannot beat. There is no victory we cannot have. We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. Ever, ever, ever. We will never give in. We will never give up. And we will never, ever back down. We will never let you down. As long as we are confident and united, the tyrants we are fighting do not stand even a little chance. Because we are Americans, and Americans kneel to God and God alone. And it is time to start talking about greatness for our country again.
Good morning and welcome to everyone tuning in from wherever you're watching. It's Saturday, October 22nd, 2022. Welcome to our Saturday edition of the Great Steak Breakfast, episode 5. I'm Roan. Noah's out of the office today, but Alan, the host of The Great Divide, is with us.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday.
Guys, before we get started, we can't forget to mention some of our finest partners, namely MyPillow. When you think of luxurious sleep, got a kind of a little bedroom sale going on. I don't know if you've heard. My robes, the My Slippers, or as we like to call them, the Air Lindells version 1 and 2, towel, bed sheets, and Giza Dream Everything. When you enter steak at checkout, you're going to get big, big savings there. If you're more of a morning person, you like a little bit of coffee, My Coffee's been launched, available in the bean, bag, and pod. Enter steak at checkout there.
Good stuff.
25% off. MyPillow.com/steak for anything sleep related. And if you want that coffee, MyStore.com/steak. You can always talk to a qualified pillow representative. The 1-800 number is tagged on all of our social medias and where you could find our mothership podcast, the Steak for Breakfast podcast. In addition to that, our good friend Alan on the other side of the camera here has launched the Patriot Cigar Company. Aged at least 3 years, premium hand-rolled tobacco from the fields of Nicaragua, right next to where Mike Lindell picks his coffee beans.
We're neighbors.
Oh, man. It's one of the best smokes you've ever known. Noah loves the Moabs. You enter promo code STEAK at checkout there. You're getting 15% off your total orders. Every order over $100 gets free shipping, and you're getting a $10 e-gift card with every purchase. MyPatriotCigars.com is the website, a premium smoke for freedom-loving patriots.
And to add to that, Roan, right now, actually running a little bit of a special on MyPatriotCigars.com. If you order a box of cigars now while supplies last, you're going to get a free We the People Richardson trucker hat, American flag, mesh back, We the People, while supplies last. So they're flying out the door. So if you order a box, you're going to get a $10 e-gift card plus a free We the People trucker hat. MyPatriotCigars.com, promo code STEAK, and you'll get your 15% off, free shipping, and a trucker hat, We the People, and a $10 e-gift card for a future purchase.
Can't beat that. Good morning, everybody. Well, happy Saturday. We just made it through a pretty big week. Now, I believe 18 days before the midterm elections, we saw a lot of boomeranging in regards to the narrative. Towards the end of 2 weeks ago and all throughout the course of this week, a lot of people in the legacy media, especially in the progressive left, have finally started to admit things like crime, the economy, gas prices, and what's going on in your children's schools are top ticket issues, and some other things aren't. We got a big midterm roundup scheduled for just a bit, but one of the things I wanted to get in first, you know, we had a couple of the tech guys on our show, big ones that, you know, they worked formerly in the Trump administration. Now they're at places like the Heritage Foundation and things of that nature. Jake Denton and Theo Wold. And, you know, they were both talking about the importance of this Elon Musk deal that's finally going through. Elon announced this week that he plans on firing at least 75% of the entirety of the Twitter staff. In addition to that, the entire board will be replaced. And, I mean, at the end of the day, if it just loosens the restrictions and the shadow bans on that platform only. It does its job. I know there's a whole lot of other angles you could take on that. Wild card coming in, and believe it or not, the absolutely corrupt and off the rails U.S. Department of Justice, at the direction of Joe Biden now, is going to be investigating the Elon Musk purchase. I don't know if you heard this, Alan. Tucker Carlson deep dove into it last night on his show. I pulled some audio, and I think we're going to check that out here in a sec. But, you know, the fact of the matter is what's your opinion on something like that? You know, should the Department of Justice have the right to look into private purchases solely for the fact because it might repress the parroted narrative that the progressive left wants to get out there on a regular basis?
No, it's the Department of Justice, not the Department of Propaganda and Media Restrictions. So this is, of course, something that is happening with the DOJ. I mean, they want to control everything. Obviously, the narrative, push that disgusting leftist narrative against us, conservatives, Republicans, come after us for everything. I mean, now I think they just saw something yesterday, and it's hard for me to listen to Merrick Garland when he speaks, but they're launching an environmental department for environmental, like,
Equity.
This is what the Department of Justice is focusing on. And we have people trafficking drugs and children over state lines for decades. And they're not doing anything with that. They're wasting all their time on this January 6th investigation, which is a big nothing burger. And now they want to talk about private purchases between billionaires and big tech companies. Are they going to go after Kanye West now also for possibly looking like he's going to buy Parler? I mean, what is going on in this country?
Yeah, that Elon Musk deal, you know, heated up really fast. And now we're already at it looks like by this coming Friday, he will be the owner of it and begin house cleaning there. I think it's
what do you think about the. All right. So supposedly 75% of the workforce, what are they? They had something like 5,000 employees or I forget what the numbers were. I remember seeing it. Right. And I mean, listen, I don't like when people lose their jobs, but obviously there's a reason. Maybe these 75%, maybe they're doing some type of audit on duties or what they're doing at Twitter. Are these people, these censor people, are they fact checkers? Are they pink and blue haired liberals that are crying that Elon Musk is buying Twitter? I don't quite know where to go with that yet. As far as, do I feel bad that these people are going to lose their jobs, or it's like, hey, you know what? Screw them, because these are the ones that have been screwing Twitterverse in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
we've lost 11 accounts over the years since we started the Steak for Breakfast podcast here. And so many verified followers, ones that were important to be in connection with, to see the material we're putting out, that, you know, are inside and outside the Beltway. And it's taken a long time. I mean, just in the last couple of weeks, you know, we've had people like Sabatini and Massey and, you know, a couple others follow us back. And then all the ones in this election cycle, you know, every time we have them back on our show, it seems like we share the episode that they're on. And next thing you know, they're following us again because they already followed us 8 or 9 or 10 times over the course of this. Let's hear Tucker talk about this Elon Musk situation, and then we'll chat about it a little bit, see what he had to say on it last night on his show.
Musk will soon own Twitter, maybe within the next week. And for the Biden administration, this is an existential problem. They cannot tolerate a free and open internet. Censorship is the only thing that allows neoliberal leaders to stay in power. They can't have a debate. They have to shut you down. And so the Biden administration is now finding ways to stop Elon Musk, not to argue against his position, but to crush him with the power of the federal government. They're not even pretending there's a legal basis for doing that. They don't have to. Bloomberg reports that, quote, Biden administration officials are discussing whether the U.S. should subject some of Musk's ventures to national security reviews, including the deal for Twitter and SpaceX's Starlink satellite network. On what grounds, you ask? Well, according to Bloomberg, quote, U.S. officials have grown uncomfortable over Musk's recent threat to stop supplying the Starlink satellite service to Ukraine for free, by the way. They're also concerned by his plans to buy Twitter with a group of foreign investors, end quote. Oh, foreign investors. Every publicly held company in this nation is owned in part by foreign investors. Every single one. And of course, thousands, tens of thousands of acres of U.S. farmland are owned by the communist Chinese government.
Yep. And it's allowed to happen. But
because apparently Elon Musk plans to form some sort of partnership with, quote, foreign investors, maybe the Saudis, he needs a national security review. Don't fall for it. This is about censorship and Elon Musk's promise to end censorship, which is the single worst thing that could happen to the Biden administration, to the Democratic Party, and to the people currently running the country into the ground. Yeah. They can't have
freedom. It makes a lot of sense there. And, you know, it's right. There's double standard. There is a fear that they are going to lose their grip on the narrative.
Yep.
I mean, you just look at what gets seen and what doesn't. You know, you could have some obscure tweet from somebody like, you know, Nicole Wallace or Joy Reid get 1.5 million views in several hours. And I think over the entirety of the time we've had our most recent account on Twitter, we probably don't have 1.5 million views total.
Right.
Even though, you know, and it's funny, you know, the things that we talk about social media censorship, our Instagram account. So, you know, we lost our main on that big 4th of July weekend when who's that guy that died that Amanda Milius is doing the documentary on?
Oh, put me on the spot.
John McAfee.
John McAfee. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. The McAfee antivirus. Yeah, yeah.
So the weekend he died, you know, hundreds of thousands of Instagram accounts went away. So we moved to our backup account. It was like at 750 followers. We quickly got up to 8,000. And since October of 2021, we've been under 8,100 followers, even though our downloads are, you know, nearing astronomical numbers.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that listen to this show, 5, 10, 20 times the amount of followers we have on Instagram. Once it gets to a certain amount, they just have a couple people from the bottom of the rung just automatically unfollow the account. I get dozens of messages a week in my DMs there that says, like, I was following you, then I wasn't. Someone shared your story and I saw it. And, you know, that's just one example. As a business, we stay away from Facebook because they always figure out a way to get it back to your personal account. I don't want to lose all that stuff. I've had my Facebook since, you know, just about when it opened. And then, you know, there's other avenues. We just have been more involved on Getter recently this year trying to. But, you know, I was in a live with Grace Chong last night, who's the engineer for Steve Bannon's War Room. And she was talking about how there's a double standard on there, too. And the people who are, you know, Getter influencers get more pull and get more, you know, showing. And the suggestions are usually people that are in their orbits. And
even though
we have a verified account, we still have very little traction on there, even though we put out the same stuff that gets hundreds, if not thousands of shares and views on places like Truth Social.
Right.
So which has been our greatest social media experience. However, it's a very limited demographic of, you know, what you're getting into. And mentioning people like Steve Bannon, Alan, I know you saw yesterday he received his sentence. Yeah, 4 months in prison, a little under a $7,000 fine. And again, that whole double standard of the two-tier justice system, it's either you're following the script or you're following the rule of law in this country. And obviously in that case, we saw that the judge there is following the script. And I think Steve Bannon has until mid-November, around the same time that Donald Trump has to answer the response for his subpoena that was issued yesterday on behalf of the January 6th committee, where they're requiring him to testify. Right. Before them. So what were you gonna say?
Well, November 14th is when Donald Trump is supposed to appear for the January 6th hearing. I only know that because that's my daughter's birthday. Okay. And I believe Steve Bannon is supposed to willingly surrender by November 15th to federal prison to serve his 4 months. Now, he said he's going to appeal, and I'm sure he's going to appeal. And I was listening to a few different outlets, and they had attorneys on there speaking. And, you know, he does have some defenses for appeal if they allow it. Like, they didn't do anything with, you know, Mark Meadows ignored the subpoena. Dan Scavino, I believe, ignored the subpoena. They're going after Peter Navarro. You know, they've sentenced Bannon. They haven't sentenced anyone to prison for contempt of Congress since, I believe, it was that whole 10 of something with Hollywood. It was like in the 40s or 50s, maybe 60s, somewhere in and around there was the last time they sentenced someone to prison.
It's been over 50 years.
Over 50 years. Okay. So for giving a sentence for prison time for contempt of Congress. And meanwhile, you know, I would say that Congress is in contempt with the American people, but that's okay. This is, again, the double standard, the two-tiered justice system. It is not fair. It will never be fair in D.C. courts, and no matter who it is, as long as they're conservative or a Trump supporter. And I wish Steve Bannon the best. I'm not a huge fan of Steve Bannon. I don't want to see him go to prison, because if they could do this to Steve Bannon, if they can raid a former president's home, if they can, the Department of Justice can get involved in purchases of companies, they can do this to us. I mean, they're doing it to us. They want to come after Venmo accounts for $600 transactions. It is complete bizarro world. We are living in this, which I feel like we're on the verge. Are we going to stay a free republic, or are we going to become a communist nation, you know, a socialist nation? It's and to think that way, I think is crazy. But all of this that's going on with the censorship, they want to shut us down. You were just talking about social media and your Instagram account. They took down mine of 8,000 followers for no reason whatsoever. I went to log in, it had no community standard violations, nothing, and boom, it's gone. And I can't figure this out on any of the social media platforms. I'm in the same boat. I've had accounts deleted. But then again, my Facebook page is wide open and reaches, it has 38,000 followers and reaches almost 10 million people. All right, when I go into the analytics, and they're okay with it. You know, everything is great on Facebook. I use it as a tool, even though I despise them. Sorry. Which reminds me, for everybody, we're live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the share button for us. It's really important to get the message out. We're live on Rumble. We're live on Getter. We're live on YouTube. We have the Great Steak Breakfast YouTube channel. Go subscribe. And obviously, we're on the Patriot Podcast Network on Roku TV, which you should all be downloading, because there's so many shows on there. My show, The Steak for Breakfast, We the People Radio. Go to your Roku device or Roku Smart TV that's compatible with Roku. Type in Patriot Podcast Network, download it, and you have a bunch of shows. But yeah, what's going to happen next? Who's next on the chopping block? Peter Navarro's trial, I believe, starts next month. Is anyone going to sit there and tell me that he's not going to get sentenced to jail time?
No, you're right. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, they're trying to set the standard with these bigs so they can have it established for when they go after the average blue collar, middle class, hardworking Americans.
And the big bad orange man, which is obviously their target. They want to. It's really going to be interesting what happens with the subpoena. Is his attorneys going to, they gave him the option to sit in person or do a remote, I believe. And how that's going to play out when it's going to be after midterms. We're going to have members of the January 6th committee that are not, well, they'll technically be members of Congress, and then January is going to come and it's going to be gone. They're gone, and hopefully the January 6th committee will be dissolved into thin air and be nothing. But
former Congressman Devin Nunes, who appeared on our show last Tuesday, he's a regular guest on the Steak for Breakfast podcast. You know, he said as well, I'm a former congressman and the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, that standard status quo would be once Congress flips, all of these subpoenas technically are null and void. I mean, they do carry some legal weight, I guess, via technicality up until January when the new Congress is sworn in. But if you're just talking about, you know, trying to enforce certain things, let's remember the most recent case of Eric Holder. You know, the former disgraced U.S. Attorney General for the Obama administration, who was found in contempt of Congress. He was eventually issued, I believe, a 3-month prison sentence. And since that came, like, I don't know, almost 3 years after the sentence was announced, he never served a day and kind of just snubbed his nose at it. We played a clip yesterday of Nancy Pelosi back when this was going on, literally saying the exact same things, almost verbatim, that Steve Bannon said outside of the courtroom yesterday. I pulled a clip of Steve Bannon, who jumped on with Tucker Carlson last night to kind of talk about this once everything had settled down. The guy was pretty worked up throughout the course of the day. He was also jumping in that live with his daughter and Grace Chung on Getter as well. But let's hear him in a little bit more of a calm state discussing the situation surrounding his sentencing.
For coming on tonight, do you agree with Matt Gaetz that this is partisan?
That's 100%. I mean, the whole Justice Department under Merrick Garland has become radically partisan. And I think that's after we win on November 8th to deliver this crushing blow against the Democratic Party, this regime. Tucker, I strongly believe you'll see Merrick Garland impeached next year by the new Congress.
I certainly hope so. People who say 4 months in prison is not a big deal. I've never been to a prison. It is a big deal. How are you going to respond to this? Do you plan to submit?
Number one, we have the judge laid out today a number of areas of appeal. I've got a great legal team. My legal team's working the appeals right now. We've got appeals on, you know, use of attorney, separation of powers, executive privilege, the structure of the January 6th committee. So we've got a lot of appeals. They'll work through the appeals process. And so this is all, my sentencing is all pending the appeals process, and we'll work through it. Like I said on your show the first time, at the end of the day, I got to go to prison by this illegitimate regime. Hey, I respect what the judge did today. I'm prepared to do it, but we got a long appeals process.
What do you think this says about our system more broadly, however? I mean, you're saying that you're being sent to prison because you advised Donald Trump politically. I mean, that doesn't sound like a free country where that, something like that could happen.
It's not free right now. You see this in whether it's the FBI rolling up individuals praying in front of abortion centers or designating parents, going to parents' rights at school board meetings for parents' rights as domestic terrorists. The Justice Department is completely and totally out of control, and the FBI is out of control. That's why I'm a big believer in defund the FBI. Use the appropriations process to defund both these apparatuses until they come to the table and we start cleaning up the rat's nest. I think the only way you're going to do it is you got to start at the top. We got to impeach Ray and we got to impeach Merrick Garland after full investigations. I think Merrick Garland can be impeached on the southern border. I think he can impeach by what he's trying to do to these parents, the parents' rights movement. I think that Merrick Garland will be impeached next year by the new Congress.
So much.
So that's his prediction. It lines up with ours. We did hit an apparatus there. For those who listen to the show, it's been a longstanding joke. We have a fairly good relationship on Steak for Breakfast with Steve Bannon's War Room. We talk with a lot of people who work in their engine room. Obviously, we've made great friends on the show with people like, you know, Boris Epstein and Raheem Kassam, who have become regular guests. And well, if you're going to see somebody on Steak for Breakfast, and let's just say you miss an episode, you can always catch them either that day or the next day on Steve Bannon's War Room, as they've become quite the best characters. But they have pretty much redefined the way that, you know, the word apparatus is used, something that was kind of taken out of the English language for decades. He's brought it back and rebranded it as one of the staples on, you know, Steve Bannon's War Room. And we had noticed it so often that we thought it was funny. So I said, you know, we really need a bell for whenever. And it's just all the guys across the board. It's, you know, Steve and Raheem, Jack Posobiec, and Darren Beatty. Those guys just love dropping that word. Like, it's so now every time anyone comes on, whenever they drop it, it's so weird sitting there with former Congressman Devin Nunes, the guy who chaired the Russiagate investigation. who did we have on last week? I'm trying to think off the top of my head. It was a pretty big guest.
And they dropped apparatus.
Oh, like five times. And it was just like, and it got to the point to where Noah stopped and then he had to go back and put like one or two in. You know what? I think it was last time Raheem Kassam was on. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like one of those words, they get hung up on it and then they drop it all the time. I think it's funny, but also great. And it's like, you know, our way of paying homage to the mothership in our podcast orbit, and one show that we work, you know, pretty congruently with the War Room to, you know, bring that word and make it back, make it great again.
It's funny you say that about the word apparatus. And every time I hear on the news or a politician talking about it, the word unprecedented, it drives me crazy because, you know, everybody uses it. It's unprecedented. And I swear now, since, you know, listening to your show and even guest hosting on your show and being a guest on your show and hearing the bell, now I actually hear the bell play in my head, the apparatus bell, when I hear the word unprecedented. That bell now plays in my head because I've heard it on your show.
Well, Steve was so wound up yesterday, he jumped on with Big Head Charlie Kirk right after he got out of court, because that show starts right after War Room on Real America's Voice, and he got hung up on the word bequeath. He said it like five times in like a minute and a half. Then I'm like, no, what are we gonna do? We're gonna have to get a bequeath bell here now. So
you might have to get the old, like, you know, might have to do that once in a while for something. I don't know.
The stripper intro horn.
The stripper intro horn. We will bequeath you.
There you go. You're gonna have to send that one to Noah. I like it. But that's a really good intro, segueing into our midterm election roundup. We put out a Substack this week. It was a narrative debunking kind of opinion op-ed there. And what we basically talked about was, as I seen the narrative crumbling. All right, let's walk this back just a little bit. First of all, on our show, and Alan, you know, me and you talk offline all the time. Mm-hmm. I never thought that the red wave was not coming. A lot of people did. So many people did. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's easy to doom. There's repression polls. You'll have pundits who you see on TV every day that you may not necessarily trust, but you're comfortable with, go out and say, well, it just doesn't look good. And, right, you know, January 6th and Donald Trump and this, that, and the other thing. Long story short, the Democrats had made their platform into a complete lie, saying that this midterm election was going to be a referendum on the SCOTUS verdict, which was, you know, Roe v. Wade getting overturned, sending it back to the states where you can vote there to see what the limits are, if any, and if abortion will be, you know, legal in cases other than like rape, incest, and preservation of life, right, of the mother. So we had abortion, sunsetting, Medicare and Social Security, and the January 6th committee and gun control. That's what the Democrats wanted to make. So that narrative essentially has crumbled and disintegrated over the course of the last 2 weeks. They have segued now. I've seen CBS, CNN, and MSNBC all run pieces in one way, shape, or form saying, you know, oh, when you go to the ballot box on November 8th, do you know that over 60% of the entire electorate is going to be election-denying racists? And it's just like, that is where the narrative, like, they are at literally, so now everybody knows that's not, I mean, when you see people like Herschel Walker and John Gibbs, you got the three Hispanic gals down in South Texas, Cassie, Monica, and I can't remember the third one off the top of my head. But anyways, you know, you have all these diverse, Dr. Oz up in Pennsylvania. You've got such a diverse group of candidates across the country.
Running now, as Republicans.
Running as Republicans. And then they start saying that they're racist, and you look at them and it just doesn't. Okay. And then, you know, people like Carrie Lake pushed back hard on the election denial stuff with the 180 examples, yes, since 2000 of prominent elected officials, and everyone that included like Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Adam Schiff, and, you know, anyone else under the sun on the
Nancy Pelosi.
Party. Pelosi on a big day, calling presidents illegitimate, illy elected, like
the,
you know,
entire mainstream media did it. It's an Donald Trump is an illegitimate president. I mean, every mainstream media outlet did it. Everyone.
So now that they have nothing literally to run on, because anytime they start to hit anybody on the issues, we saw the biggest nuke so far this election campaign cycle was the J.D. Vance rebuttal to sitting Congressman Tim Ryan talking about abortion. And J.D. Vance brought up the fact that 10-year-old girl in Ohio, the only reason that she was able to be raped is because the Department of Homeland Security, you know, refused to remove a previously deportable alien, a convicted felon, convicted child molester, and he was allowed to do that. And that's why that girl was kind of set up for an abortion because of Ohio standards, had to go outside of state. I mean, that's just destroyed the narrative. And I think for whoever was allowed to debate, you see a lot of the Republicans set the standard. I am a Christian. I am unwavering in being pro-life. That is my personal stance, but I will go with whatever Congress feels is the appropriate limits. They set a boundary of where they are personally, and they didn't tie it to where they would be as a congressman. It's not a hypocritical statement. It's just the way it is. You can't say that you want to ban abortion on the planet. Well, hypothetically, you can. I wish it was.
Right.
You know, but the fact of the matter is, and then just use that as something when you're, you know, trying to pitch to moderates and walk away Dems and, kind of like easygoing Republicans. So the fact of the matter is, now that they had no narrative, we've gone back to all at one time. Oh, we're going to put everybody in jail. Steve Bannon's going to jail. Peter Navarro's going to jail. Donald Trump's going to come and testify before the committee, and then he's for surely going to jail. I've also seen places like CNN and MSNBC kind of putting out these things like, is it really a good idea that Donald Trump campaigns for you this close to the stretch? And, the answer is yes. Yeah. Because the only reason we're here is because of his over 200 America First endorsed candidates leading the way here, and the ones that strike the most fear into the heart of our Mick leadership up in the Beltway, Ronna McDaniel, Mitch McConnell, and Kevin McCarthy. So...
So anyway, I can't stand them.
I kind of broke it down how this election cycle was never going to be about abortion. And honestly, at the end of the day, when you look at the total electorate, the people who are going to go to the ballot box on this November 8th, the referendum day on the Biden regime, abortion was probably not even in your top 10 when you got gas prices, 401k, saving account, energy costs, kids giving blowjobs, crime in the city, radical DAs, our geopolitical allies completely abandoning us, Afghanistan, the U.S. southern border. I've already counted 11 there.
Crime just on the state level, where I am in New York. I mean, I'm actually, Lee Zeldin, I think we spoke about it off air. I think of yesterday, he was up a point. It's a toss up in New York, but it's amazing how so many Democrats, prominent Democrats, we're talking 40-year Democrats that have never even thought about voting for Republican in their lives, are now coming out and saying, I haven't voted for a Republican in 40 years. I've always voted Democrat. I'm voting for a Republican this year. I'm voting for Lee Zeldin. When you have prominent Democrats who are city councilmen and assemblymen and senators saying, Democrats saying, I'm supporting Lee Zeldin for governor, because the main issue really in New York is the economy and crime. And I'd say more so crime. It's unbelievable what I'm witnessing in my own state and seeing. And I hope it's true to everybody's word and feeling that November 8th, we get rid of this unelected, vile, Kathy Hochul, and we have Lee Zeldin, and maybe have a fighting chance to regain our state as a decent place to live. I can't stand it now. I live 40 minutes out of New York City, and I won't bring my family into the city. And I tell everybody who says, "Oh, I want to go visit New York and go to Times Square," and I go, "Why? You want to hold your life in your hands and maybe get stabbed in the face with a screwdriver or shot in the gut walking down, Park Avenue?" It's not worth it. But abortion is not on the table. It's for rational thinking people. November 8th, that boat has sailed. The Democrats screwed that up. They used it as great fundraising platform when Roe v. Wade got struck down. I believe the Democrats wanted and supported and loved that Roe v. Wade got struck down and sent back to the states, because they fundraised bigly on it during their campaigns, and that's what they do. They exploit all of these, whether it's don't let a good crisis go to waste, Elizabeth Warren and all these other morons, and that's what they do. And your Substack, it which everybody has to read, by the way. If you're not reading the Steak for Substack, go to Breakfast podcast.substack.com. We'll put the link somewhere. Rome puts one out every week, and they're long, but they're really great. They're well written. Rome, I don't even know how you find the time to do it.
And neither do I. There's a lot of insider commentary too, and I'll annotate that in the beginning of it. If I talk to Liz Harrington or Christina Bob, some of the legal team in Trump world, Cash Patel, if I ask for their hot take, I'm going to take their commentary and I'm going to work it into the narrative of the Substacks there. And it's really important, because then you've got your finger on the pulse of the people that are closest to the president, the ones that are working directly with him, having the opportunity to text Rick Grenell when he's literally traveling with Donald Trump and ask him a question about something that's going on over in Europe, the whole Russian narrative and stuff like that. And getting just two sentences, it's like opening up the page to a book and getting in there. And, I think the biggest component of this whole thing is, in any other election cycle, let's look at perfect example. Arizona senatorial. Jim Lehman would have been the perfect Senate candidate as a Republican in Arizona in any other election cycle, but we can't have someone like him who's just not Blake Masters.
Right.
Blake Masters is bringing some of this to the table, that X factor that drives fear into Mitch McConnell, that drives fear into the establishment. He doesn't care about anything except getting this country back on the right track, where Jim Lehman might lean a little bit more partisanly and might, rub elbows with some of the, other congressmen there who don't necessarily have the initiative to get the work done as fast as we want it done. I honestly think that Jim Lehman could run for Senate against Kristen Sinema in the next election cycle and beat her. And I would be completely fine with him being in Congress, but not this election cycle. Same thing with the narrative. This whole Roe v. Wade overturn, this abortion issue that the Democrats wanted to make like the centerpiece of this election cycle, just about in any other midterm election cycle, this probably would have been a perfect opportunity for them to sneak some House seats in there, probably win one or two Senate seats that we're going to win this year in a regular campaign cycle. And in governors, they'd hang them out to dry, but the people have had it. You can't walk outside of your house without literally having the threat of dying on a regular basis due to things that the Democrats have done to your cities. It's just where we're at right now. We're in the most important midterm election season in the history of modern politics, and we've got the cream of the crop running. The gold standard, Carrie Lake, sat down for a little town hall yesterday, and I pulled a clip from her. Let's listen to that as we dive into our midterm election roundup.
Hobbs debates you.
I do think she's a coward. Is that your question? Thank you, sir. I do think she's a coward. There's a variety of reasons she won't debate me. Her legislative record was dismal. She voted against the border wall, against the virtual border wall, against the border strike force twice, against asking the federal government to help us recoup any costs that we are incurring because of our wide open border. She voted against that stuff. She voted against small businesses, any legislation helping small businesses more than 80% of the time. She voted to raise taxes. She voted to double the gas tax. I'm just getting started. I mean, if you want me to keep going. And she, while all this was going on, she co-sponsored legislation to introduce sex education in kindergarten.
Yep.
Nice. Are we, can I get, I want to get off crazy, this crazy planet right now. Let's go back to planet Earth here. So, first of all, I know teachers. No kindergarten teacher wants to become a kindergarten teacher so they can talk to a five-year-old about sex.
Oh, some do.
And the good teachers, by the way, they don't like this curriculum.
Yep.
So Katie Hobbs knows she has a terrible record when she was in the Senate. She's been incompetent. That's not my word. That's the Arizona Supreme Court's word in describing her in a recent case as Secretary of State. We just saw this week that she's already screwed up in this election by sending out 6,000 incorrect, wrong ballots to people.
Imagine that.
We saw in the August 2nd primary, her guidance for numbers of ballots to print in Pinal County, one of our largest counties, was way off, and they ran out of Republican-only ballots 1 hour
before
election day.
Imagine that.
Incompetent. And she wants to take that incompetency and move into the governor's office. I'm gonna rip her to shreds in a debate. She's right. She should be afraid of me.
It's amazing how these people won't debate.
I don't think this is gonna be in any of these books. I'm positive. She only showed up for work 19 days in the last 6 months as Secretary of State. That's not how you get rich, by the way.
How is that acceptable?
You get rich and you do well by showing up every day, putting in extra hours, working harder than everybody else. That's how you do well in life. And she's, frankly, she's lazy. I don't think she's very smart. She doesn't know right from wrong if she's introducing sex ed in kindergarten. And she's not articulate. If she could not articulate one good thing about the Latino community in a softball interview, then I don't think she can articulate what we have going for us as a state. And we are actually in a battle with people like places like Texas and Florida and South Carolina and South Dakota. These blue states, companies are fleeing. You can't blame them. People are fleeing. We have an opportunity to capture some of those companies and have them relocate here.
That's a good point.
And if she can't articulate her ideas on a debate stage with me, how is she going to go toe-to-toe with like killers like Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott? They're going to fight for their state, and she doesn't even know how to articulate what we've got going here in Arizona. So that's the long answer of why she won't debate me.
And that's the long answer that we like to listen to from Carrie, because she knows her shit and she's ready to roll.
To mention, she said Hobbs has said on hidden camera when they were recording that she doesn't want to talk about politics with anybody she doesn't know. How are you in public office and saying that and running for the biggest public office in your state and you're saying that and running away from journalists like Project Veritas and locking yourself in bathrooms of restaurants because you're confronted by media about things you've said and asking you why you won't debate your opponent and then giving interviews telling because Carrie Lake is full of lies. Oh, and by the way, she's an election denier and they're a danger to our democracy, you know, like Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And then we'll say, well, PBS is going to give me a platform so I can address everything that Carrie Lake is doing without having her in the room screaming at me and lying. That's what You're running for governor of Arizona. Get your ass in the ring and debate. No one should be allowed to deny anyone of a challenge of a debate. As a matter of fact, I believe that it should be election law that if you run for public office, no matter what that public office is, you should be required to participate in a minimum of three debates. Because there's a winner and a loser. We'll take the best two out of three for the debates. And that's what it is. You can have three, you can have 10. But to say that you're not going to debate and come up with bullshit reasons, it should be, there should be election laws preventing that. That's just my opinion on that.
No, agreed. And you know, and debate in a timely manner, not like in the case of places like Pennsylvania, where, you know, Hobo Shrek John Fetterman is going to finally debate with ridiculous stipulations Dr. Oz on October 25th, when only about 45% of the total electorate is still going to be out, you know, and over 60% of the electorate would have already have cast their vote. So it's just one of those things where, you know, election leading up to election day, a lot of things there need to be reformed, but then a lot of things need to be reformed on election day first. So we have our work cut out for us, and, you know, we kind of have to keep our eyes on the prize. Speaking of which,
not to interrupt you, I'm sorry. Just a couple things happened in the chat I just wanted to address. Rumble, we have a first-time listener for the Saturday show that listens to both of our shows. Trumplican O, he just first time for the Saturday show, already a regular listener of the podcast. Love your shows. Thank you very much. And then earlier when we were talking about the voting, I had a comment on Facebook. I got it right here from Patrick Fike. And he had said, yeah, the Democrats are expecting, they have this delusion that every female in the country is going to go to the ballot box to vote because abortion is at the top of their mind. You know, top of mind. Remember that, top of mind? Because, you know, look, they want to rule my body and tell me I can't murder babies. That's not on every female's mind. You know whose mind that is? That's on the minds of females with their pink and blue hair who are brainwashed by sick liberal organizations who protest in the DC streets telling female pro-lifers that they should be violently raped and made to have a rapist child. That's what women who are pro-choice, pro-murdering babies are out there doing, wishing violent rape on pro-life women. And to that, they could all fuck off.
I like it. What I don't like is that my all-time favorite convenience store, Wawa, announced this week that it will be leaving the city of brotherly love due to violent crime.
Unbelievable.
And, yeah, thanks to Josh Shapiro's 5'3", law and non-order that he has out there.
I beat him by an inch, by the way.
There you go. Future governor of the Keystone State, Doug Mastriano, sat down with dry sex commentary Jack Posobiec yesterday to talk about something that we all hold near and dear to our hearts, Wawa. If you don't know, you have to get up to the tri-state area. I know they've moved outside of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. They'll never make it out to the West Coast here. But
sandwiches at Wawa's.
And Wawa iced tea. Let's hear it.
Yes. Senator, we've got Wawa leaving the city of Philadelphia during this criminal epidemic. We're all rooting for the Phillies. We hope they do well. We hope they do better tonight than they did the last time against the Padres there. Oh. But what does it mean after 6 years of Josh Shapiro's policies that Wawa is pulling out of Philadelphia? And for folks who don't know, Wawa is just symbolic. This is the iconic brand for the Philadelphia area. They're pulling out of their home city due to crime and 6 years of Josh Shapiro.
It's a political earthquake. I mean, it's an indictment of the failure of Josh Shapiro, the Democrat nominee for governor, that he has failed the people of the state and the people of Philadelphia in such an incredible way that the businesses, you know, this is a landmark, you know, in the Southeast, Wawa, and that they have to shut down stores in a very busy area of Philadelphia because of lawlessness is an indictment on the failure and incompetence of Josh Shapiro. He's failed the people of the state. There is an anti-police culture here. Josh Shapiro is part of the defund the police movement. They want you to forget that now. He won't. That'll be back on the forefront of his mind here next year. That we are short 500 police in Philadelphia is just part of the problem. that resulted from the policies of Shapiro and his his leadership as the senior law enforcement official here to be soft on crime, to have a revolving door, you know, at the prisons, and cashless bail and all this other garbage. Instead of prosecuting criminals and crime, he's letting them out, and about 70%, I'm told, when they get out, they're committing crimes once again. They're not even repentant or whatever, because they see no responsibility and accountability. And so on day one under Mastriano, that all changes. We're going to be a law and order state. I'll have the backs of our police forces, and I'll make sure that we're able to recruit and as well as equip our forces on the ground there to restore law and order. You know, the basic function of a government, there's many roles it plays, but the basic essential function, of course, is to provide for security so yep. people can live their lives and live, you know, in a secure environment. And Josh Shapiro has failed us. Because of that, he's unfit for office.
I agree. And
absolutely.
It's great to see Doug Mastriano ascending. You know, I believe that poll came out yesterday. It showed Dr. Oz was up by 1 or 2 points in Pennsylvania. It had Doug Mastriano within striking distance, I believe, within 6. I have to believe just the state of that place right now and how the rest of the area, the tri-state area especially, you know, we saw Cittarelli almost pull it off in New Jersey when a lot of people gave him no chance. We saw Lee Zeldin right now, who we're going to hear from next, you know, leading the incumbent radical progressive governor there. And, you know, in a place where you see a lot of House candidates and probably a senator coming out of Pennsylvania on November 8th, I just can't not think that Doug's not going to pull this off. You know, the reason that the audio is so bad on that clip is because him and his wife are literally driving around 24 hours a day. Yes. You can go on Facebook at almost any time of the day, like middle of the night, and Doug Mastriano is like in the corner of a building, like a restaurant or a truck stop, and he's live. And he's just live.
He's doing a lot of lives. He's live on Facebook every day, multiple times a day. He's doing live streaming. He's not stopping, and he needs to. Because I'll tell you, I talked to a few people from Pennsylvania that I know, and they're big Doug Mastriano fans, but they're not confident enough in a win because, if they all say the same thing, that the corruption in Pennsylvania when it comes to elections apparently is very well known among people in Pennsylvania. And just there are some weird, weird individuals. Like you go into, Pittsburgh or Philly, and the amount of Fetterman signs that people are seeing, it's remarkable. Like how they would want this guy with this cognitive decline that is not going to be able to represent them properly in D.C. and make their state shittier than it already is becoming is amazing. Doug Mastriano is the guy. Pennsylvania needs to realize that you have businesses leaving cities in your state because of crime. That's a problem. Your economy is not going to grow if businesses are leaving because people are getting shot and assaulted and robbed in the streets. It's not going to happen. So wake up, Pennsylvania. Wake up, Georgia. Wake up, Arizona. Wake up, America, and get to the polls November 8th. It's unbelievable. Wake up, New York. Let's go. It's a shithole. We need a change.
And that's exactly the thread we'll stay in right now. The gubernatorial candidate from the Empire State, Lee Zeldin, jumped on with Tucker Carlson last night to talk about, well, believe it or not, the thing that's become the centerpiece of his campaign strategy, which is really resonating with the voters, and that's making New York safe again. Let's hear him talk about it with Tucky.
Much for coming on. It's pretty remarkable. Not that we didn't have faith in you as a person, but I mean, it's an overwhelmingly Democratic state, and you're now winning the governor's race. First, congratulations. Second, what do you attribute this to?
I mean, you have a governor who's just not doing a good job. She's unlikable. She's corrupt. She's pandering to criminals. She's pandering to tax and spend liberals. She's advancing woke policies as opposed to just focusing on what is most important to New York voters. If she was tackling rising crime, if she was tackling skyrocketing costs, then this might be a different campaign. But here we are talking about how we need to remove district attorneys when they refuse to enforce the law. We don't have recall elections in New York, but the governor does have the constitutional authority to get rid of a DA who refuses to do their job. We're over here talking about the need to get rid of cashless bail and some of these other pro-criminal laws, and we need to support our men and women in law enforcement who are being hung out to dry, getting the handcuffs thrown on them as opposed to putting the handcuffs on criminals. We have a state ban on the safe extraction of natural gas, and now Kathy Hochul wants to get rid of all gas-powered vehicles here over the course of the next decade. We just had the new CDC guidance come out where they're adding the COVID vaccine into their list. And you have a governor who is talking about as a possible consideration. Her past remarks have indicated that maybe she would mandate that for kids, but we already have it being required on college students. And we have people who are getting fired for their refusal to get the COVID vaccine, like our healthcare workers who used to be hailed as heroes, now treated as zeros. I'm somebody who believes that there should be no COVID vaccine on anyone, whether it's grade school, higher ed, employment, or otherwise. And everyone who should be fired, who was fired, should be getting their jobs back with back pay. So the contrast is clear. And even Democrats and independents are saying, you know what? We have to go a new direction in order to save the state. Kathy Hochul has to go, and she will on November 8th.
It sounds like she will. It's just God a willing. Remarkable story. It kind of comes out of nowhere because, again, it's so overwhelmingly Democratic. It almost seems like she's trying to wreck the state.
Where we are out here campaigning our tails off to earn the support of voters to do our part to save the state, Kathy Hochul right now is crawling across the finish line. She's trying to survive this campaign. Yeah. And clearly her goal here is to save Kathy Hochul. And the average voter out there in New York hitting their breaking point in the state. Listen, there's a reason why New York leads the entire nation in population loss, Tucker. And I don't even think that Kathy Hochul can finish this sentence, that New York leads the entire nation in population loss because. And if you can't finish that sentence, no one's going to ever expect you to actually fix this. And a lot of people pick up on it.
So nicely put. Wow. Congratulations, Congressman Lee Zeldin of New York. Hopefully, will be. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you will be, too. And you want to know what? The Dems overplayed this hand this cycle. Then they went and did their whole thing where they go on social media and to the legacy media and the radical progressive left and the print press, hit pieces, you know, just saying that it was never going to happen. The red wave is dead. All this time, they thought the people were just going to fucking eat it up like they did, like it was before COVID, like it was during COVID, whether it was right after COVID. And then they forgot about the last 19 months. And, you know, as this country literally smolders, they are now worried 18 days before midterm election about places like New York State, Oregon, Washington State, Connecticut, New Hampshire, you know, Ted Cruz, who really doesn't talk out of his ass that much when he's really getting down to the brass tacks of you know, what he thinks you know, elections are going to look like. He doesn't throw his name at people and endorse them when he doesn't think they're going to win. And he doesn't really make, you know, very many predictions if he doesn't feel it. He said we could have as many as 57 Senate seats. Feels more comfortable saying 53 to 54, but could see a pathway to 57. When you're looking at governors like Lee Zeldin, like adding a senator in Washington State, adding another governor in Oregon, the sky's the limit right now. We are going to see the Steve Bannon sentencing and the Donald Trump subpoena was like clown shoes to the shit we are going to see over the course of the next 2.5 weeks. We are going to see probably more raids. We are going to see some more hit pieces. Yeah. This guy cheated on his wife, blah, 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 paid for an abortion, this, that, and the other thing. Hot audio from 25 years ago doesn't mean shit. Nope. Remember the Access Hollywood Donald Trump tapes? You take it, you laugh at it, and you let it roll right off your back, because you know if you feed into this bullshit narrative that these candidates who have made it to essentially the finish line are now all of a sudden bad and going to hurt you, then you are going to experience pain. Just think, if New York doesn't come out and literally get Lee Zeldin over the finish line, someone who fought for her life in an election where that state is already on its last, like, imagine what she's going to do to the people there. Imagine the revenge she's going to have on the average citizens there. Everyone's going to be out of jail. Every kid's going to have a book that has kids blowing each other in it. Everyone's going to get fired for not getting vaccines, and they're going to do whatever they want. People who win in this midterm election, honestly, after how awful this Biden regime has been for this country, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, you have to feel like you had a mandate, because you're either going in to restore the state of the nation or you're going in to finish the job of burning it down. And that's the only narrative there is. And, you know, it's kind of where we're at right now. You know, I saw Herschel Walker yesterday. He attended a football game, but right before did a little campaign event there. I do want to squeeze him in because he's one of our first America First candidates and great friend of Steak for Breakfast. He's got an amazing team working with him. Let's hear him weigh in about some of the state of the nation.
We've done, we put people in Washington that have forgotten about the people that elected them to go. They've forgotten about America, the greatest country in the world today. And y'all, I hope you saw it Friday. I went up against that wolf and she told him. Did he have a doubt that I wasn't going to beat him? Did he have a doubt? I had no doubt. Everyone else had a doubt. I had no doubt. I told him I was this country boy from Wrightsville, Georgia. And I'm going to meet him, but I'm not afraid of him. But he was afraid of me when he left, wasn't he? He fell and left. Because he don't know it's time for him to go. Because what he's done right now is not right. What he's done right now is voted with Joe Biden 96% of the time, which means he either like him or he didn't know what he's doing. Because what Joe Biden has put against this country, against Georgia, is not right.
No, it's not. And you want to know what?
What we've done, that
town hall that he showed up at the other day with Raphael Warnock, it was kind of like that outside event where they had like the evictees
for
Raphael Warnock's like whatever church co-op that people were living in. He didn't expect Herschel Walker to bust out the checkbook and write checks for all those people. You know, listen, these guys that are sitting senators, Tim Ryan, Mark Kelly, Raphael Warnock, they have just tripped over themselves. And you see how ill-equipped and inept they are to be sitting in some of the highest positions in this country. You know, the chamber of Congress that regulates the president and, these people have no idea what they're talking about. They just think they're going to go out there and say that, like, voter suppression is real, racism is real, Donald Trump's coming back, you're not going to be allowed to have abortions, and that's it.
Right.
And like they said, you can't find someone who's a sitting Democrat senator who hasn't voted with Joe Biden at least 95% of the time. Everybody is higher than that for the most part.
You're not – It's amazing. And people need to realize also that, and I think it's more than realizing, it's just going to happen that all of these hit pieces that are going to come in the next, 18 days, two weeks plus, are going to galvanize the base, I believe, just like the Mar-a-Lago raid did, just like, you know, the January 6th hearing where they voted to subpoena Donald Trump, just like
and the Steve base is Bannon.
Yes, and the base is growing because people are waking up. And maybe, you know, the base is growing as far as they don't want to vote for Democrats. But also, yes, the base is growing, if you want to call the MAGA Republicans or Trump supporters. Because, there are Republicans out there that aren't really necessarily supporters of Donald Trump, but they're definitely supporters of voting Republican because of what's happening. And, again, these Democrats are just going to keep stepping on their own dicks.
Are you talking about violent domestic extremists who
violent domestic extremists MAGA Republicans, yes,
proprietors of misinformation.
Yes, that's the proprietors of misinformation, just like this show is nothing but another outlet of misinformation and promoting racism and homophobism and transphobism and all these other isms and phobias. You know, it's unbelievable. Ron, I wanted to ask you a question because you are so knee deep in polls and really always have your finger on the pulse of all of these races. I don't know how the hell you do it, but do you have in your head a ballpark number of what you think, say, House seats?
Yeah, we call it our midterm election pronouns, and I've held the same number for the last at least 6 months. 35 governor seats, 53 Senate seats, 245 House seats is my absolute floor. Sky's the limit, but anything lower than that in me is not as good as a job as we can probably get done right now, especially when you have all of these polls literally within the margin of error or showing Republicans up. And then you just see the timeline progression of the narrative collapsing and how they used it and where they're at now. They're going to try one more, big shock and awe. I think it started yesterday with the sentencing and subpoena, and, we'll just have to see where it goes. But I think the fact of the matter is like 35, 53, 245 is my absolute minimum of what we need to get. And I could see it getting higher. I'm starting to see some, projections from some, Con Ed Twitter is out there at it again, showing some real receipts on some demographics that lead to show Republicans could have more success like that. Maybe we could get into the 250s in the House. Maybe we get 54, 55 Senate seats and they'd be legitimate wins for these candidates right there. We're going to have a couple more. Don Bolduc and Leora Levy, two people who you wouldn't even think would be sitting Congress people next year, are basically fighting in the races of their lives right now. And given, their Democrat challengers real problems in the state of New Hampshire and Connecticut, they'll both be with us next week. And, we're just going to try and bring it to everybody like – we do every week on our show. I know we're running a little bit over right here. I do have one more clip in our election roundup. It wouldn't be an election roundup without possibly inserting one of our favorites of the entire election cycle, since we're still, we've got about, what, 11 days left in Oztober. Dr. Oz himself, he was on Fox News yesterday. He was talking about crime also, and John Fetterman. Let's hear him in a brief clip.
Eternal order of police for the entire state of Pennsylvania endorsed me, and they endorsed me unanimously. They know that these are addressable problems. And the reason they endorsed me is because John Fetterman has been blocking their efforts to protect the people of Pennsylvania. When you mention these numbers, just to put it in perspective, almost half of all the murders are in young people under the age of 18. There's a lawlessness that permeates the very fabric of Philadelphia. Now, I lived in Philadelphia, in West Philly, when I was in graduate school. I could walk to school. Wasn't a problem. Parents don't let their kids leave the homes. And my opponent has also opposed cash bail, which prioritizes criminals over victims. Some of these people get out there, they'll be rearrested 100 times. The prosecutors don't do their job. Cops aren't allowed to do their job, so no new cops join up.
Yep.
And violent individuals keep reoffending over and over again until it becomes one of these more exaggerated incidences when you just show there are 100 casings of guns being fired off.
Yeah, Dr. Oz is just, you know, he's got it. He's got the endorsements. He's got the support of the base right now. A lot of people have come around. Listen, Jack Posobiec's come around. And, you know, it's just one of those things where we're in a really good spot right now. We're in a really good spot. The Democrat Party.
A lot of states in play. A lot of states in play.
More states than should be for a normal election cycle. But the fact of the matter is that, like we said throughout the course of this episode, the Democrats have done it to themselves, which, you know, we started talking about a little bit on our. It's weird. I do want to bring up, we played a couple clips from Tucky yesterday. Tucker Carlson did a segment yesterday talking about, you know, the Pennsylvania Senate race. He did a little piece on John Fetterman, right? So yesterday on our show, all right, just a little bit more of a backstory. We've made pretty good friends with the Daily Caller. They do some amazing work there. That's the Tucker Carlson founded news outlet. You know, we had one of their chief commentators, J.W. Gibbons, on a few times with us. He was on Tuesday, and we're going to have one of their senior editors and writers on with us next week. I can't remember the name off the top of my head because my schedule is on the other side of the desk where I usually sit when Noah's here. But, you know, and they've shared our show and shared our Substacks. We're really appreciative of that. But it's pretty funny. Yesterday on the show, while we're doing our midterm election roundup, we did play like a montage of John Fetterman, which included a 2020 Zoom interview during COVID, where he's talking about releasing up to 5,000 convicted violent felons back out into the Jesus population. So long story short, I'm watching Tucker Carlson last night and I hear something from our and I look and Tucker Carlson literally played a portion of that interview. Now, out of all the stuff that's out there and out of all the segments, you know, in the land, there is no way statistically that Tucker Carlson decided on yesterday he was going to pull that 20-second blurb of John Fetterman from 2020. I think it's a good nod to Steak for Breakfast and the hard work we're trying to do down here on the front lines when, you know, people like Steve Bannon pull our guests, when people like Tucker Carlson use, you know, some of the narrative we pulled up in our show. But some of the things we've been trying to paint for our listenership is that what's next? We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but there are people who are in policy writing, both legislation and tech policy that we have on the show frequently. And they're excited to talk about what it looks like on the other side. On the other side of the aisle, a lot of people in the Democrat Party, you know, we saw Joe Biden kind of lock up and give some weird statement when they asked him why Tim Ryan and Raphael Warnock doesn't want him going to campaigning with him last week. Well, in a little bit more controlled environment, and believe it or not, he's still going to vapor lock up. He sat down with Lester Holt yesterday while on the road for an exclusive interview to talk about what the future looked like for him. I think the one big question that everybody, at least in the Democrat Party, wants to know is he going to announce that he's not going to run? Lester Holt kind of framed it a little bit in our last audio clip of the morning. Let's hear what he had to say.
Right in the book that Bo said it was, quote, your obligation, your, quote, duty to run. And you also write duty was a word Bo Biden did not use lightly. You're president now. And there are plenty of people who are saying that you shouldn't run again. Because of your age. I'm wondering, what do you think Bo Biden would say to those people who think you shouldn't run again?
It's not so much he'd say to those people, what he'd say to me, in my view. The only reason to be involved in public life is, can you make life better for other people?
No.
And depending on who the opponent is, if they have a view that is so and such antithesis of what I believe democracy, I believe, is good for average Americans, then his argument was, Dad, you have an obligation to do something. The reason I'm not making a judgment about formally running or not running, once I make that judgment, a whole series of regulations kick in, and I treat myself as a candidate from that moment on. I have not made that formal decision, but it's my intention to run again. And we have time to make that decision.
And you know, there was a little later in that interview, they asked him, I don't know if he fell asleep or he just didn't know how to process the question. And they're like, they segued right off of that one. And they're like, all right, what about Dr. Biden? And he's like, who? And Jill Biden, does she want you to run? And he just like sat there with his eyes closed. And the guy literally says, Mr. President, he's like, yes.
Yes.
And that's kind of,
that was when the duty was happening.
Oh man.
That was when the actual duty was happening. They were like
that moment. Yeah. The edibles kick in.
Oh. Yeah, the edibles kicked in. So,
all right, Alan, we're wrapping up here. Why don't you tell our listenership where they could find you, social medias, the amazing work that you do with the podcast on The Great Divide, and all the other stuff you've got going on.
Okay, just follow me over on Truth Social. I want to get the following going over there at The Great Divide Podcast. You can get me Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays on Rumble, Facebook, the Patriot Podcast Network. And actually, I'm on Saturday mornings, the Great Steak Breakfast. And it looks like starting next week, I'm going to be the new co-host on We the People Radio for with James Curry. He's got a really big show over there. So I don't know. Get me on the Stone Zone, Roger Stone Show every Thursday on Lindell TV at 5 p.m. Eastern. I can't even believe how much media I'm doing now. I think I'm doing something every day. But yeah, go get me. Just Google. Use the Google machine, The Great Divide Podcast with Alan Jacoby. You'll find me. I'm everywhere. Just like steak for breakfast.
Yeah, you can find us across every downloadable podcasting platform. We like it when you subscribe to the show and rate it on Spotify and iTunes or Apple Podcasts. And again, you could go to any of our social medias, whether it be on Instagram, True Social, Twitter, Getter, and just type in Steak for Breakfast. You'll see our logo come up. It's the Mr. Steaks guy. And there you'll find a link tree that'll take you to all our social medias, you know, our current Substack. We've even got a Telegram channel. If we throw some articles in there and some tweets in there, just in case we ever get nuked across the board and we'll have to recover there and use my kids' phones again to register new accounts. But this has been great. We hope everybody enjoys their week. We'll be back on, well, our show on Tuesday. Alan's on just about every day of the week. So check him out there as well. And we'll for sure see you guys next Saturday.
Yeah, we will be back next Saturday for the Great Steak Breakfast. So we'll see all you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you hit the share button and follow us everywhere. Until next time, see you soon.
Have a good weekend, guys.